Mini episode 209 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.info.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode number 209. This is Rick Morris coming at you today. I want to thank once again our good friend Russ Cohen from Sportsology for the remote hookup, as he has been providing for us over a period of time. We greatly appreciate that. We are celebrating our 600th hour of programming today with the FDH Lounge, and we have a very, very special guest for a great discussion. I go back almost about a year ago exactly this time, our 500th hour of programming. And we were able to pull together a couple different things at that time. MMA and wrestling legend Ken Shamrock, Steve Perry, Bob Barker. So it's very daunting to try to live up to that when you're planning the 600th hour of programming. And we've been able to do that today. I'm very happy to say we have one of the greatest actors of his generation, a gentleman who's been on the program with us previously. He was on when we were still doing our full-length episodes in May of 2011. And at that time, we were just previewing what was about to come out, his Full Metal Jacket app that he was working on at the time. That has since reached completion, so we'll be talking about that. His recent short film was released. It's been out about, I believe, about a year or so, but it's now been released online. And we have it embedded at our blog, the same place you can catch this show, thefdhlounge.blogspot.com, his movie, Jesus Was a Commie. You can check it out there. It's approximately 15 minutes. You can sample it and get your thoughts on it. We're looking forward to discussing these matters, the presidential election that he is very passionate about, his career, and so much more. It's a pleasure to welcome back to the show Matthew Modine. Matthew, welcome to the program, sir. It's a pleasure to have you back on with us.
Thanks very much. Nice to talk to you.
Thank you. I'd like to start this conversation. I know that we first got into contact with you when our senior producer, Steve Cirillo, happened to bump into you in New York City. I know that you've got a fair amount of friends and family back in the East Coast area, and I'd like to get your thoughts on the events of this week with Hurricane Sandy, the pace of the relief efforts, the cancellation of the New York Marathon, any of the things that you think are the most noteworthy about the situation out there.
Well, now, when I left this morning, I heard that the marathon was still on. Have they canceled it now?
This just in, yes. Mayor Bloomberg did back down on that after taking a ton of criticism. Yes, sir, it's canceled this weekend.
That was a smart move of his, because I don't think that was a wise choice. It's just devastating, you know. I mean, what's happened, but the only thing that I can say that is a positive that comes from this kind of natural disaster is the way that people come together and help one another, and it brings out, like Abraham Lincoln said, our better angels, you know, and the way that communities come together to help people who've slipped and fallen and lost their homes. It brings out the best in people. So that's the bright shining light in a horrible situation.
No question about that. We have seen the best in human nature this past week as folks have rallied around to help themselves and their neighbors and their families. I would certainly agree with you on that. And that sort of spirit is going to take us in a moment here to discussing your Jesus Was a Commie movie, but on the path to discussing that, what I'd like to talk about with you in terms of the election, there's been a fair amount in the last couple of years of criticism from your side of the aisle towards the president on any number of issues, whether it be the fact that Gitmo is still open, whether it be some of the drone warfare that's been going on, the prosecution of whistleblowers, rendition, indefinite detention of U.S. citizens that was signed into law. So I'm curious, as a supporter of the president and someone who is a supporter of the president for liberal ideals, do any of these issues really trouble you that much, or are they just sort of like the cost of doing business? How do you look at some of these issues?
Well, I can't imagine the difficulty of being the president of the United States. To be it's such a daunting job, you know. I'm always surprised that we can't find more extraordinary people to come forward to be the leader of this great nation. You know, it seems, as I've gone through my life, that the pool of talent has gotten weaker and weaker with every passing generation. And I did hope that President Obama would be everything that he seemed to project. And he's failed at some things that I wish that he'd done a better job at. And but I can't imagine the difficulty of doing his job. Every president, every politician makes promises that aren't kept. I'm a sympathizer in the sense that I know that what President Obama inherited was an unbelievable mess. You know that it's kind of like a house that our country having, you know, that was burned down, and us people as a nation have had to go to work to rebuild what can't be rebuilt in 4 years. So I give the president a break for not being able to completely overhaul the country in 4 years' time. That said, and it's part of the reason why I made the film Jesus Was a Commie, was that one of the things that I think is damaging our country is this partisanship, that people not being able to reach across the aisle and do what's right for America and just holding the party line is something that is, to me, completely un-American. Our country is made up from people from all over the world, with different, you know, ethnic backgrounds, different religious backgrounds, and, you know, like the storm shows us that when your country is broken and torn apart by a storm or by a terrorist attack, what you have the opportunity to do is to put those things that separate us to the side and come together as human beings, as humanitarians, and work together to alleviate the suffering and the pain and the economic woes that people are suffering through.
Well, that's a very good summation, I think, of what the situations are that face a president and the circumstances of it and the realities that are dealt with once you get into office. No question about that. I'm curious, and since we're starting to delve into the movie now, as somebody who has seen it, and as I say, we have it embedded on our blog at thefdhlounge.blogspot.com, where people can go check it out, in addition to all the other places it's now available on the web. I'm curious about your philosophy as it goes with this. The movie is pretty much entirely centered around, obviously, Jesus and New Testament teachings. As somebody who, I'm a Roman Catholic, I would say that I personally am influenced by both the New and the Old Testaments. The Old Testament, based on what I've seen of some other of your statements online, it doesn't seem to play a tremendous amount in your philosophy. I don't want to, make that statement. I want to ask you about that and kind of draw you out on that, on what your philosophies are in terms of the Bible as a whole and its teachings.
But I think it's a book filled with metaphor. I mean, I think that there are great teachings in the book, and not just in the Bible, but in many different religious doctrines. There are things that we can take from those things that make us all better human beings, and to live more peacefully, and to find intelligent solutions to the problems that we face as human beings. The Word of God, I shudder to really say the word, because I think that it's something that's so beyond our ability to imagine it or draw a picture of it or to say what created all of this life throughout this planet and the expanse of the universe is something beyond my ability to comprehend. It's just awe. It's just absolute awe. So the teachings that I took from the Bible, you know, growing up, there are great lessons. I think that Jesus was a great teacher. And the things that the parables that he left us with are things that if practiced can change the course of human history. As I say, my favorite parable that I mention in the film is those among you that are without sin cast the first stone. That what Jesus did when he spoke that was awakened a sense of responsibility toward our fellow human beings, that everybody makes mistakes. So, you know, the story comes from there was a woman who was an adulterer, and the law of Moses from the Old Testament was that this person should be stoned to death for committing adultery. And Jesus didn't, you know, appear to like that idea at all, and said that those among you that are without sin cast the first stone, and saved the girl's life. That, you know, it's just beautiful. It's a beautiful, simple parable that changes the course of history.
Well, one of the things that really kind of jumped out at me from watching the movie, the number of broad philosophical interpretations, you know, different thoughts that you had, really, that were crammed into to 15 minutes. There was a lot that was set in there. And one of the things that I was thinking as I was watching the movie in anticipation of speaking with you, and it's almost sort of a mirror image of the times on this show when we've had some philosophical public policy discussions with folks of the libertarian bent. I'm always really interested in the question of of practical application, how we get from here to there. So in terms of the many different things that you were talking about in that movie and the markers that you were laying down, what are some things you see, Matthew, in terms of implementation, tangible markers for our society to reach that point?
Well, I think the reason that I made the film, honestly, I mean, I did give it a purposely provocative title. And as I say, the people that have been most offended by the title are after having seen the film, are the people who are most impacted positively from having watched the film. Because it reminds them of the goodness of those teachings of Jesus Christ and other important people who have changed the course of history. But my biggest, you know, I'm 53 years old now, and what I see happening in the world is people not communicating with one another anymore, that we're being divided and pushed into groups, and the groups aren't allowed to communicate with each other. And that, for me, is something that is the death of the United States of America, our country. That this is a country, when we were kids, they called this a melting pot. It was a country that was made up from people from all over the world. And it was the ideas of those people that gave this place strength, you know. So when we start talking about Republicans and Democrats, conservatives or liberals or Catholics and Jews or, you know, Muslims and Mormons, that we shouldn't be divided up into groups, that we have to work together to solve the economic problems that we're faced with. We have to work together to solve the environmental problems that we're faced with, that our country, the problems that we face in our government, they can't be this partisan, you know, that we have to work together in order to solve the problems. And as this conversation began, talking about that storm, Sandy, and how it tore apart the eastern part of the United States, that people are working together to solve those problems. It's a perfect example of what Jesus was economy is the idea in it, is that we have to work together. You know, this idea, humanity, is such an important idea. It's something that is such a beautiful word, humanity, and it takes effort. It's not something that we're born with. It's not what is it called? With your heartbeat, you blink, an auto, what is that called when you breathe? We don't have to think about breathing. You know, we breathe and we blink and our heart beats, but I don't know what it's called. But humanity is not something that is natural. It's something that we have to work toward. And the teachings of someone like Jesus Christ are filled with humanity and working together. And as I say, that word communism comes from the word com, which means with. It means working, you know, to be together, to share ideas, to have common beliefs, to have common goals. You know, I'm certainly not advocating communism, because communism doesn't work, because we're all selfish. We all want a little bit more for ourselves and for our families. So it's a utopian idea that can never work. And, you know, and the reason that people get upset by the title of the film, Jesus Was a Commie, is because when they hear communism in America, we think of fascism. We think of Lenin and Stalin and Chairman Mao or that knucklehead in North Korea.
It's funny there, Matthew. You started to anticipate my next question that I had for you when you were talking about that and human nature, and you mentioned the word selfishness in there. It's a thing where I go back towards the end of the movie. What really kind of jumped out at me is there was something that was mentioned in there about the importance of dreamers in this world, and
yes.
I certainly agree with that, and I applaud the sentiment. And I look at somebody like you with the career that you've had. You know, you had a dream to make it as an actor, you know, and you've done that many times over, and you've done that, you've accomplished your dreams. But again, somewhere along the line, and it's not a thing, I don't necessarily mean profit with everybody in terms of necessarily literally money, but everybody has that dream to get ahead, to make it. How do you square that with the other part of this where you're talking about, you know, common things here, looking out for everybody, and, you know, the influence that we all have in there? Because there seems to be at least a little bit of tension between the two thoughts there. So how do you see that being managed in the human spirit, the tension between dreaming to get ahead, build a better life, achieve what you want to achieve, and then still looking out for your fellow man?
Well, I mean, that's a good portion of our taxes go to wonderful things, you know, like Social Security, public education. Those are big ideas that we had in this country to be able to help people so that they can get an education, you know, to have, I'm in Los Angeles right now, and they have some of the best junior colleges in the country that if you're a resident of the state, you don't have to pay for. So, that's the taxpayer's money that's supporting those schools to give them an opportunity to get education and to, you know, make their lives better. The thing you mentioned about dreamers, imagine our world without dreamers. You know, Jules Verne wrote a story about going to the moon and building a deep sea submersible called the Nautilus. And after he wrote those books about going to the moon and going underwater, somebody read those books and said, I want to build that. And I think within 50 years, there was a deep-sea submersible called the Nautilus, built by a couple Englishmen. And within 100 years of Jules Verne writing that book, man went to the moon. We began space travel. But it's inspired by those people, those people that are dreamers. And so, we have Bill Gates and Steve Jobs, who are tremendous dreamers, you know, and I mean, Steve Jobs built a whole campaign around the idea of dreamers, that they're the people who change the world and make the world, give us the opportunity to make the world a more peaceful and hospitable place.
Absolutely, and I think that's a message we can all agree with. When you look at the things that dreamers have achieved to make the entire world a better place. I'm curious about this as far as your political philosophies. You, by dint of your day job of acting, have the ability to continue to come into contact with source material that I'm sure influences your political worldview. I'm thinking specifically your role as John Thane of Merrill Lynch in Too Big to Fail, chronicling the meltdown of our economic system a couple of years ago. What did a role like that teach you as far as our financial system, some of the things that were at play, and, you know, specifically things that you had to do to get into your character? What were some of the things that you learned from that experience that you didn't know before?
Well, that nothing's really too big to fail, you know, and I think that the system doesn't work anymore. We're teaching young kids to go through economy classes, economic classes, business classes, teaching them a model that is antiquated. You know, we live in a global market. The world, I think since we went to the moon and saw that image of the Earth from the moon taken from there, that we realized that this is a small, precious global community, and that the environmentally we understand that the pollution that goes up in China comes down someplace else, and our pollution here in America goes up in the air and it comes down someplace else. So the things that we do have an impact on people in other parts of the world. So the way that the global economic system is set up, I don't think it works anymore. And I think it, you know, would have been terrible, and it probably would have been worse than it is right now economically, America and Europe. But I think that it's okay for systems to fail. That my father was a drive-in theater manager, and the drive-in business is finished. And it wasn't because they were being mean to my dad or. It was the way that things were. The television channels. It wasn't three channels anymore. It was multiple channels. There was VHS tapes. There was cable television. There was DVRs. You know, the land was worth more than the drive-ins could produce, and they tore the drive-ins down and built subdivisions and shopping malls. It wasn't because my father was being punished. It was just because the economic model had changed. Do you understand?
Yes.
So the way that Wall Street is run, the way that the financial, that if those people, the way that they were running things doesn't work, it has to go out of business. I think it should have failed. I would have let it fall.
Well, it's a real interesting prism, Matthew, when you look at the continuum of, let's just say for a second here, the entertainment industry, from your father running the drive-in theaters to you getting in the business and being an actor, being in Full Metal Jacket relatively early in your career, and then subsequently, and this was something we were talking about during our last conversation, Steve Jobs, dreamer that he is, creates the iPads out there, and all of a sudden, somewhere along the line, you get the idea for this iPad app for Full Metal Jacket. You dreamed about it, conceptualized it, and it has since come to pass. So please give your thoughts on that and how that project turned out.
Well, that was one of the young kids that worked for Apple Computers. His name was Adam Rakoff. And when I released my book, I went and did a talk at one of the Apple stores in New York City in Soho about how the book was built on a Mac. And time went by. He knew that the book was a limited edition. There were only 20,000 copies of the book, and I was never going to make any more of these metal-covered Full Metal Jacket diaries. And he said, what if you made the book into an app? And I said, what do you mean? He said, well, I'd have you record the book. We'll do a special musical soundtrack. We'll have sound effects. We'll take all of the photographs that you took with your medium format Rolleiflex camera, and we'll do high-res scans of all the photographs, and we'll put this thing together and create something that has never been created before as an app. You know, and we call it an appumentary, which is and it sounded exciting. So I started working with Adam Rakoff. From Apple Computers. He was, as I say, he was one of those geniuses from that company. And after a long year of unbelievably hard work and crowdfunding on Kickstarter to raise some money to build it, the app has been released to unbelievably positive reviews. And it's an extraordinary thing. And the thing about the app is that it can continue to grow over time. So if you bought the app today, with the updates that we can do, we can add photographs from other people that took pictures on the set. We can add interviews from which we're starting to do now with people that worked on the film. So it can continue to evolve into something that's a not just a story about the making of Full Metal Jacket and the people's experiences of making the film, but what it was like to work with Stanley Kubrick and a point of view that is quite unique.
Oh, that's tremendous. Yeah, to be able to think of it being updated even further potentially, that really is unbelievable. Another one of the things, obviously, that's happened since last we talked was the completion of production and then subsequently the release, this just mega blockbuster that you were in, Batman's The Dark Knight Rises movie, of course, unsurprisingly becoming a billion-dollar movie. It was expected to be huge and lived up to all expectations in that regard. I know for everyone involved in it, you know, tainted by some sadness also with the opening weekend massacre that happened at the theater in Colorado. So I'd like to get your thoughts on that entire experience. That must have been a roller coaster of sort of positive and ultimately negative once that happened there. But your thoughts on being involved with this once-in-a-lifetime project?
Well, it's just extraordinary. I was so happy when Christopher Nolan invited me to come aboard. To, as you say, over $1 billion now. I think it's almost $1.5 billion. So that boat that he invited me on has now become a juggernaut, and it's I'm just really, really honored to have participated. You know, Gary Oldman is a friend, and it was just wonderful to meet Michael Caine and be in a film that Morgan Freeman was in, and the incredible cast, Christian Bale, and I can't talk about it because I'm still in shock that I was invited on board.
It was a great performance and a great movie, certainly, Matthew. And that's been the interesting thing about your career is that you can get cast in these big movies. You like to do some other projects like Jesus Was a Commie. Also got the stage work going. You've always got a very interesting career going as far as the different developments. So we always like to give our guests a chance to plug here at the end. So, Matthew, anything we didn't cover sufficiently about anything you've got coming up, please take it away.
Well, the reason I'm in Los Angeles is I'm working on a film that a new feature film that I'm directing called The Rocking Horsemen, about four kids who make a rock and roll band in 1962. And it's I've just stepped away from the table right now to speak to you, but I'm getting a high sign from my producers to get back inside and get back to work. We got to cast those four 16 to 18 year old boys who are musicians, and they have to be able to be actors and musicians to play the parts in this film.
Look forward to seeing and hearing more about that, Matthew. A great conversation, as it was last time. Thank you for coming on and helping to exemplify the kind of great conversations we like to have with folks. I really, really appreciate your time.
Thank you very much. If you are a musician and you're listening, or you have a son or a son that's a musician, it's 1962. There's a Rocking Horsemen Facebook page. You can post your video of you playing an instrument and you have an opportunity to audition for the film. It's an open call.
There's the crowdsourcing of the audition. That's wonderful, Matthew. I hope people certainly take advantage of that. Greatly appreciate it. Love to talk to you again sometime, sir. Thank you so much.
Thanks, man.
Appreciate it. The great Matthew Modine, everybody. Thank you for tuning in. FBH Lounge, mini episode number 209.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IAmBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN,
ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.